Coming to you live from Colorado, where the weed is legal and the beer is micro, welcome to the Sports of Fantasy.
Morning, sports fans out there. Thanks so much for tuning in to the next episode of the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. I am your host, Mark Ademus, and I am finding out very quickly that I'm getting old as I, for the second weekend in a row, tried to go out drinking on Friday, and for the second Saturday in a row, am worse for wear. But anyway, we are here, we are live, and we've got an extra special show for all of our listeners out there. If you are listening in, thanks so much for the support, and we would really appreciate it if you'd help us a little bit more. Go to Facebook and like us, go to Twitter and follow us. You can do both at the handle at the SPT Offensive. You can also follow us on Instagram at the Sports Offensive with underscores in between the name. And also, if you are listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, know that you can also do so on iHeartRadio and on TuneIn Radio. And TuneIn is our preferred because you can put your phone to sleep and still listen to the show. So again, thanks for everybody who's tuning in this week. If you have any questions on our special show today, please feel free to call in at 929-477-3204. Again, the number here is 929-477-3204. Now I'd like to bring on my co-host, Pennsylvania's own JP, and he's got our trivia question for the week.
Well, thank you there, Mark Ademus. Kayla, thank you for coming on the show today. I want to go into the trivia question of the week. This one is pretty easy for me. What is the fastest growing bone in the animal kingdom? Fastest growing bone in the animal kingdom. We'll get to that at the halfway point. Let's bring in our other co-host, Mr. Nate D-O-double-G. Nate Dog, how you doing this morning?
Gentlemen, how's it going today? Excited to be on. Really happy to have Kayla on with us this morning. Excited to get into what she's got to offer. And
I think everybody might be confused because we haven't actually said who she is yet.
I know.
But, you know, it's nice to have you back on the show there, Nate Dog. You've been MIA for a while.
Yeah. So, my number one job actually has had me pretty busy the last couple of weeks. So.
All I can say to that is it's time to get those priorities in order.
And
this is number one, and that's number seven. So,
yeah. Who does number one work for? Who's number one work for?
And, we want to give a special shout out to Mother Nature for actually letting us have winter now. It's been nice since we haven't had one all winter season long. So it's finally cold. It's finally snowing. And feels like we're actually living in Colorado.
I'll tell you what, man. The drive up here was absolutely beautiful. Heading up the highway. We got snow on the mountains again. Actually brisk and cool. I loved it.
You think about how many people don't know that experience of driving within just a massive backdrop of mountains that are just coated in white. You know, and especially like you're saying, that first day after a big storm comes in.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, just glimmers, and actually absolutely outstanding. Well, everyone, thank you again for tuning in. Like we said, we do have an extra special show today. We have a guest that's going to be on the program with us. And so if you have any questions that you have regarding big game hunting or some fishing, we would love to take your calls and get her input on that. She hails from the Volunteer State, and her name is Kayla Nichols. Go ahead and check her out on Facebook and follow her on all her profiles. Kayla, can you hear us?
Hey, good morning. I got you loud and clear.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, we're very, very happy to have you on the show here today. I thought we could just pretty much jump right in to kind of let our guests know who you are and get to know a little bit of something about you. What do you do for a living out there?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. I've been really excited about it, but I am a hunting, fishing, and outdoors fanatic, actually.
Oh, that's, yep, very awesome. So let's just get right into the meat and bones of this. Where did the passion start for being, an outdoors person hunting and fishing?
For me, my passion started way long before I could even hold a gun steady. I started hunting and fishing with my family whenever I was a kid. I've like you said, I'm in the Volunteer State, so I grew up in the sticks. And we've had deer antlers hanging on our walls my whole life. So, it just started for me so early, and I would actually even go out in the morning time before I can even take a gun, before I even had my hunter safety course, and just sit with my family and hunt with them. So once I got that hunter safety course and I got that firearm, it took off from there.
Great, Kayla. So any memories from when you were young and got started hunting, what your first animals were that you hunted?
Oh, absolutely. The first big game animal I ever hunted was a deer, and, you know, that was something that was always the biggest in my family. So that was the first animal I ever harvested, big game. But to be honest with you, whenever I was even younger, I was a crow assassin in my backyard. I would go out after school whenever I got home, and no animal was safe around me if it was in season. So I think the animals kind of like...
So
yeah,
Kayla, I got
quickly, you know, don't come to my yard.
Okay, so you said deer was one of the first animals you hunted. So down there in Tennessee, do you have whitetail or do you have mule deer?
We have whitetail in my location, and I'm kind of jealous of everybody around that has mule deer because I had the opportunity to go to Saskatchewan. I went during whitetail season, so I was there to harvest a whitetail, but I saw some amazing mule deer, and I really wish I was there during mule deer season. Next year, I'm definitely going to have to go back earlier and try my luck on that. So,
excellent. Now, I know a lot of the hunters out here in Colorado love the fact that we're situated in a wonderful spot for a hunter. You can go east to Kansas, east to Nebraska. You can go to Oklahoma. You can go up north to Wyoming. Whatever you're really looking for, you can find it. And, is it the same way in Tennessee? Are there a lot of surrounding states that have – you know, good access to game?
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually getting ready to go down to Alabama. Northern Alabama is pretty close to me. It's about an hour drive, and I do a lot of fishing down there on the Tennessee River. And I'm actually going to Alabama down, you know, a little bit farther south, and I'm going to do some hog hunting. So I'm really blessed to be able to get so close to the water in the woods in Alabama. I do go there often. I do a lot of hunting and fishing in that state, but there's also some areas that's close here in Tennessee as well, you know, just a couple hours drive if I go east or, you know, north, like you said, in Colorado. So we do have a lot of advantages. I try to get out a little bit farther. I try to get to Missouri sometimes and do some duck hunting because, you know, that's prime around there. I'm a pretty close drive to several different species. The big difference, I think, for Tennessee hunting and Colorado hunting, for example, would be I have a lot more access to small game. Versus I think you all have, you know, wonderful access to a lot of big game and a lot of beautiful species. So I'm a little bit jealous of that, but I can make you around here for the most part.
And, you know, listening to you talk about your hunting prowess, sounds like you would be right at home in either the Hunger Games series or in the Lord of the Flies, adventure.
I would try my luck.
So now, if you were to describe an overall really successful hunting season, like what would that mean to you?
You know, I think there's a lot of different keys whenever it comes down to successful hunting season. I think it always starts out with dedication, you know, first of all, along with passion. I think a lot of times people are surprised at some of the game that are harvested. And they're always like, how do you find those? How do you get those? And it comes down to time and it comes down to effort. And when you have the passion there, you just put the dedication with it. So it always starts with that. But there are several different things that, you know, I think are important, especially with whitetail hunting. You know, I think that land management is so important. It's not always about killing the biggest deer, but, you know, if you're out there looking for a good one and you want to kill a big buck, you know, for a few years you have to grit your teeth and let those smaller ones, you know, walk along and let them go. It's easier said than done, but I think that's so important. I also think that playing the wind is, you know, a key factor. Obviously, there's wonderful lines of scents out there that, you know, you can utilize, but you always have to keep in mind that, you know, scents are only so good to, you know, an animal that has such a good, you know, nose on them. So I think that's so important with deer hunting, just to be mindful of, you know, where you're hunting and you know, where your deer have been coming in, so you're playing that wind correctly. So along with that, you know, it comes with keep trail cameras up and, you know, little things go a long way. And, you know, with turkey hunting, it's a whole different ball game because, you know, turkey season's here pretty close. I've been getting geared up for that, and it's been on my mind. And, you know, there's so many different things you can do with a bird. You can interact with them so differently. And so that makes it a whole different challenge. But I think keys with birds are, you know, always listening to them and always responding correctly to them. And, you know, always be patient with a bird. I think that's, you know, very, very key whenever it comes to being successful with harvesting a big bird, a mature bird, is always be patient with the bird. And I'm guilty of, you know, sometimes getting a little excited.
So, aren't we all?
That's yeah.
So Kayla, when hunting, how do you know where to go? Like, what are the best places to hunt? Do you hunt on land that you own, or do you have friends that own it, or how do you know where to go?
You know, I have a lot of good relationships. I've lived here in this county my whole life, so I'm so blessed to be able to have some people that have land that I have the opportunity to hunt every year. And so I always have, you know, more success on that land because I hunt it more consistently. I know the terrain a lot better. But there's always times where I go out and I'll research some WMA land. You know, for instance, the hog hunting I'm doing in Alabama, I just got online. I needed to find a place where hogs were close. And, you know, after a couple of weeks of researching people's reviews and, you know, some facts on Alabama's outdoor website, I found a good area where I feel confident. I pulled the land map. So I've, you know, kind of tried to get familiar with the terrain as much as I can. So I'm going to spend a few hours kind of checking everything out whenever I get there, trying to find some key areas, you know. It depends on what you're hunting. Like, for instance, with these hogs, I'm going to be looking at some more damp areas. I'm going to try to find somewhere where there's some mud. It's been warmer here. It's actually 64 degrees today and sunshine and right now. So I'm going to try to find a little bit of water for those hogs.
Well, Kayla, I'm going to ask you a quick question here. If you had to go to a gun range, your favorite weapon to shoot for fun, what is it? What's your go-to gun?
Man.
If you
just
Well, are we talking clay or are we
you
talking
know, that's
target?
That's difficult.
Just straight up
actually,
gun to fire some ammo.
I don't go to gun ranges too much. I have a lot of buddies that love shooting, and I try to get out with them and have a good time. So definitely my preferred would be a shotgun because we can all get together, get some targets, get a sling, and kind of give each other a hard time at the same time. So I really do enjoy, you know, just playing around with a shotgun. I have an 8.35 12 gauge that I feel like is one of my best friends. I'm emotionally attached to my shotgun. So I think that would probably be my preferred.
No, we have a 44 acre farm in the middle of PA where we have our own shooting range on it. We used to go over there all the time and, you know, shoot 9mm, 357s, a couple 38 snubs. Never got into the rifle shooting though.
See, I love shooting handguns and I have so much fun with it. But I do also, you know, I can't really answer that question because I also love shooting rifles and kind of playing with tannerite and stuff. So
right.
I guess it depends on my mood, what kind of gun I want to shoot that day.
Cool. We're going to switch gears just a little bit here. Let everybody know that you can call in and talk to Kayla at 929-477-3204. That's 929-477-3204. I got to ask you, because I used to do a lot of fly fishing, what is water bow
fishing? Oh, my goodness. Water bow fishing is like a hybrid between fishing and hunting. So you're harvesting marine species, but you're shooting them with a bow. Essentially, it's called a bow fishing rig, but it's basically a kind of a nylon rope that ties to the end of your arrow with a sling. And the other end is connected to your bow, and it's kind of like a reel, so it reels in the line. And you go out on the water. I actually go out at nighttime. We have several lights. So you go down the water, you're going down, and when you see a fish, you shoot at it. When you hit it, you fight him and get him in, and fish him in, you reel him in. So it's so much fun. It's like the best of both worlds. If you love hunting and you love both bow hunting, you're gonna love bow fishing if you fish as well, because it's so much fun.
Does an arrow?
You know,
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What were you saying?
Well, I was just gonna ask you if does an arrow hook a fish better than like a fishing hook does or a fly? Or, I mean, like, are they comparable? Or, because I know that, you know, if the hook goes, you know, around the bone of the mouth and then gets into the soft tissue on the outside, it's almost impossible for the fish to dislodge it. Do the arrows work the same kind of way?
Well, you know, I think whenever I started bow fishing, one of the biggest surprises for me the first time on the water was, you know, you're shooting an arrow into a fish. You know, an average fish around here that we're shooting carp, so an average is going to be, you know, around 20 pounds. So you're thinking you're probably going to get close to killing this fish when you get a bow and arrow and you shoot the arrow through the fish. So I was kind of expecting, like, the fish not to immediately just float to the top like a goldfish, but, you know, kind of have a little bit of death in him. But it's not like that at all. You shoot the fish through kind of like his – I try to get him anywhere, to be honest with you, but ideally you want to get him right through his widest area. And when you shoot him, the fish literally come alive. They will fight you all the way in. I've lost so many fish. You know, I've tried different tips and stuff. Fish are just so strong that some of the fish, no matter what you do, and you know, no kind of, you know, products are going to prevent the fish from having the strength of just, you know, your line gets too much tension on it when they're fighting, and they're going to rip that arrow out and get away from you. So, lost some good fish, but if you work with the fish and you're patient with them, if you have somebody also that's maneuvering the boat really well, you can keep that big fish on. Another good tip would be to have a backup shooter there with you. You get an arrow and a big fish, you know, one over 30 pounds, you have somebody else there, have them shoot the fish as well. So now you have two arrows in there. So one of you gets pulled out and you don't lose the fish. But it's still pretty difficult to keep them on if they're big.
So the arrow has like a fishing line attached to it? Is that how it works?
Well, it's not a fishing line. It's like a nylon rope. It's 200-pound
okay.
test.
Wow.
So it's kind of more like a rope, and it feeds into like a bottle.
Okay.
And
so
I use an AMS bow fishing rig, so it's just kind of like a plastic bottle attached to a reel, and you reel the – when you hit the reel, it just brings the line into the bottle. And so that's bringing in your arrow.
So it's automatic retraction?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said.
Does the line retract automatically, like with a button or something, or are you cranking it?
Cranking it. Yeah, you have two things you need to do whenever you shoot the fish. It has a lever on it. You push the lever to get tension on the line, and then you reel it in, just like a spinning reel.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Okay, so Kayla, we're going to go into kind of some of some memories for you here, but can you think back to some of your more successful hunts, and maybe what are some of your biggest kills?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, one hunt that really always sticks out to me, and I make a joke with all my buddies about it whenever I tell them about the hunt. I'm like, I swear, me and this turkey, before I shot it, we looked into each other's eyes. and that's no joke. I was on a hunt a couple of years ago, and I was out with a buddy, and we were kind of sitting back on a fence line several yards apart, and both of us had our back to this green pasture because we were looking at a different green pasture just based on some trail cameras and some past hunts. We were expecting those turkey to come out in front of us, and we were sitting there, and, you know, I don't even know, probably 2 hours before it got ready to get evening time and us to get ready to leave, I just happened to, you know, kind of glance over my shoulder, and lo and behold, there's 20 birds out there.
Wow.
And so immediately my heart just drops, and I'm thinking, how long have these birds been there? You know, I have so many thoughts running through my head, so I'm trying to get the attention of my friend. So I'm throwing rocks at him, and finally I get him. I'm like, look back there, look back there. So we wait until we can get close to each other, and we conjured up a master plan. You know, we knew exactly what we were going to do, and we were going to get this bird because we knew it was a dominant bird. He hadn't gobbled for us to hear the depth in his voice or to hear if he was a double gobbling bird, but we knew he was a big bird because he was the only gobbler that was in the pasture with several hens. So, I mean, he was a dominant on that land, and so we conjured up this master plan, and we get around this hill, and we're crawling up to these birds, and they're on the hilltop, so they can't see us because we're crawling up to them. And we had decided when we get up there, we were just going to jump up, and we're going to shoot the bird real quick. So we crawl all the way to this mountain, and it really wasn't a mountain, but it felt like it was because your adrenaline's pumping, you know. I felt like I was kind of like on Call of Duty with my last life, you know, this has to happen. So my mind's ready, you know. I keep telling myself, I'm like, this bird is about to go down. So
this is going to be the best version since Black Ops 2. So you know, it's a good year for the Call of Duty.
So Kayla, how big was the turkey?
The turkey ended up being the biggest turkey that I've ever killed to date. He had a 10.5-inch beard and 1.5-inch spurs. And that's kind of how, like, I always measure with my birds. People have different ways they like to measure the weight of him. I've measured that one. I think he was 20 pounds. But, you know, what really is important to me is the size of the spurs on the bird, because that determines how dominant that bird is going to be out in the wild. Because, you know, they're basically surviving against their peers, you know, depending on how sharp and how long those spurs are. Can they fight the bigger bird, and can they win that territory? So anytime you get a bird with 1.5-inch spurs, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's bittersweet, because, you know, it's a beautiful bird and a successful harvest, but you also know reality is you might not ever get a chance to kill another bird with the spurs that big. So it's double-edged sword for sure.
I got a question of complete ignorance here. Are these turkeys that fly or turkeys that don't fly?
Fly to an extent. They don't fly too great. They can get away from you if they need to. And they do fly up into trees at nighttime to roost and sleep and fly down in the morning time. But if you scare them, you know, they'll fly away from you. They can get away, but, you know, you're not going to see them just out while you're driving down the highway, you know, beside the car or nothing.
Gotcha. How about what's your biggest buck that you've ever taken down?
Oh, my biggest buck that I ever taken down was actually a recent hunt. I got the opportunity to go to Saskatchewan, Canada, like I said, and, you know, I was on an amazing hunt. I had one of the best times while I was there. I ended up harvesting three different species while I was there on, you know, a three-day hunt, so I was even more blessed than I thought I was going to be. But I have a partner up there, Chris Cheaters. We're actually working on some filming for next year on something we're going to call the Wild Woods and Waters. So, you know, we were up there, like I said, trying to harvest a whitetail, and I had a tough weekend. We got on some beautiful deer, and like I said, we saw some gorgeous mule deer, which weren't in season. I actually ended up getting that whitetail 1 hour before I had to leave to get my flight and get back to Tennessee. So that was the most memorable and, you know, the biggest whitetail that I've ever killed. He, you know, and he was a 150 buck, and he was gorgeous, and he had a beautiful rack. So I really can't say enough good things about that buck. I was so tickled to death. Whenever I killed him, I actually almost, like, knocked over the guy that I was with. when I saw the buck, like, I saw the buck on the ground, I turned around, and I thought I would tackle him like a quarterback. So,
well, Kayla, I've got a 3-part question for you here. A, how big of a rack did that buck have?
He was an 8-point buck,
which
means a lot to me. Yeah, which is, you know, it sounds small until, you know, you see that he scored 150 and he had mass on him and he was so wide. So he was a beautiful buck. And, you know, I've killed bucks around here that did have more points on them, but really just the mass on that buck and the width on that buck has really made him the best kill that I've ever had. He had some so long mane beams. They were ridiculous to be an 8-point. So
right.
It sounds
now,
small if you say he's an 8-point, but he was a pretty good one.
No, you know, trust me. My dad's been hunting whitetail for years upon years upon years upon years. And what is the average size whitetail in Tennessee? Is a question he had actually for you.
Well, actually, an average size whitetail, if you're looking at a good size harvested buck, a mature buck, it's, you know, always going to be a, you know, 130s or a buck,
right,
or, you know, 140s buck. We don't really get, you know, some larger whitetail around here. I think that has to do with a couple of different things. It definitely has to do with our temperatures, I think. And it also has to do with, I think, poor land management. I think that, you know, we have a lot of, you know, people around here that we haven't been able to get these big mature bucks grown. So when they see an 8.2-year-old buck, it's dead, you know. So you never get that real mature, older big buck around here in Tennessee, but that's going to be your average whitetail around here. You're going to score about 130.
Okay. So Kayla, switching gears a little bit here. I'm a chef at my other job. And so I wanted to ask you about the biggest boar hunt, or maybe the most memorable boar hunt that you've had. And then what is the favorite part of the hog, if you have ever enjoyed eating boar?
The biggest boar that I ever killed was a little over 470 pounds. It was an awesome hunt. I shot him pretty close range. I hit him directly in the kill spot, which was directly behind the ear. It was amazing. After that, I stabbed him because he wasn't dead. So
wow.
That was fun, too. and
oh, we always like to hear that.
Yeah.
So, Kayla, with the boar, what's your favorite part to eat? And maybe if you have any good recipes to share with our listeners, that would be awesome.
You know, I think with the boar, my favorite part, and I even use the fat sometimes in some of my beans because it makes the flavor so much better. You know, who doesn't love fat in the South?
Fat equals flavor.
But, you know,
exactly.
Another recipe I have for you, not on the boar, but one of my favorite wild game recipes is the turkey breast. I actually cut it up and I cook it like chicken, like fried chicken. But I'll add a Cajun spice to the batter before I cook it. And you should definitely try it. It's amazing. If you love fried chicken like everybody does, then you'll love fried turkey breast even more. I really can't even explain to you how awesome it is. So if you ever get a chance to try that out, definitely do it.
Well, we have kind of a do you want to share with our listeners the funny story about the turkey fry, Mark, at the house?
Well,
is that relevant?
Yeah. Well, that's always relevant. So the standpoint that I tell this story from is really kind of interesting because my family had a timeshare out in Maui, and I had gone out to Hawaii for the Thanksgiving holiday. And, you know, Hawaii is a number of hours behind Colorado. So, you know, you're calling ahead, I think, 4 hours or at least three, maybe four. So I get up, you know, and we're having a late breakfast in Hawaii. And I decide to call home to see how all the folks are doing for Thanksgiving. And at that point, we had a pretty big group. It was basically all of our softball people that came over. And I am not kidding you. This is how the call went. The call, you know, ringing it. Then someone picks up and I'm like, hey, how's everybody doing? And all I heard was, how and I was like, what in the hell? And then the phone got passed off to somebody else. And I realized that my roommate, Chavez, was absolutely plastered at about 10 a.m. in the morning, along with everybody else at the house. And then they were making a fried turkey. And the first thing, that my buddy's dad said to him when he told him he was going to fry a turkey was, do not drink before you fry that turkey. And I guess he knew his son well because you guys put it in there and it exploded almost.
Yeah, it caught fire.
And now the rumor is that you were up in your bed asleep before 1 p.m. Is that accurate as well?
Oh, I would think that that's pretty close to accurate.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty damn
accurate.
Well,
I think JP got the Jaeger out at about 8:30 a.m. So.
That sounds about accurate, too.
Jaeger, not Jameson?
It could have been Jaeger and Jameson, for all I know.
Yeah, I think actually we were switching off and on.
Wow. Yeah, that was quite the...
Long story short, we didn't burn the house down. So
that's what counts.
Yeah, that's what's important. Moral of the story.
Yeah,
but deep fried anything is
moral
awesome.
Moral of the story, never get beer involved with hot grease.
Yeah, exactly, Kayla.
I don't think that turns out good for anyone.
No, it does not.
Agreed. You know, we didn't discuss any of your largest fishing catches.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, the biggest smallmouth I've ever caught, I think, is my biggest catch that I always want to bring up. I've caught some really big largemouth, you know, but they're always supposed to be bigger in size, hence the name.
Absolutely.
But the reason the smallmouth is so important to me is because I was fishing a lake that, you know, I enjoy fishing a lot of the times during the summer months and during the spring spawn. And I had, you know, a great day. I was catching consistently good fish, but nothing really big. And I was right out by the dam trying to fish some of the current. And I hooked into such a good fish. It was, you know, a beautiful trophy smallmouth. And I knew from the moment it jumped up that, you know, my heart dropped when I saw it. I was like, this fish has got, you know, I've got to get this fish into the boat. So it's funny because several boats were around at the dam. A lot of people like to fish that area. So, you know, the fish jumped up and people around, they see this fish and I'm fighting him. And I fought that fish for so long. It continuously kept going back down deep. I would get it up a little bit and it would head right back down. So I got the fish right to the boat. I'm getting ready to lean over and lift the fish in, and all of a sudden the fish jumped up and spit my hook out, and everybody on the river saw me have a meltdown out there. Yes, I was devastated. It was heartbreaking. But so then after that, I kind of had like a vengeance out, you know. Whenever I went to that lake, I got burnt, and I was like, I'm going to catch a big fish, and I know I'm going to. And a couple of months later, I was down there, and I wasn't really in the same area, but I was fairly close. And lo and behold, I did get a chance to hook onto a beautiful smallmouth, and it ended up being my biggest smallmouth to date. It was 6'2", which is, you know, outstanding for around here. They say you're lucky if, you know, you can catch, you know, one smallmouth in your lifetime over 5 pounds in this area. And right. I've had the opportunity to catch over five pounds.
Oh, wow.
But definitely that one was the most memorable, because I feel like I just kind of like finished a vendetta on that fish on that lake.
So
it wasn't the same fish, but to me it was better after that much work.
So my question to you now is, what's your favorite bass lure? What do you normally use?
It depends on the weather. If it's cold weather, I really like using jigs. During the summertime, if I'm fishing in creeks, I really like using any kind of white soft plastics. They usually, you know, seem to be good for me.
Mm-hmm.
I also lean more towards like green colored, moss colored brush hogs in the creeks. But if I'm fishing a river channel like the Tennessee River, you know, I like in the spring to fish crankbaits. I really love striking crankbaits, actually, especially the deep diving. I would suggest those to anybody. So it just really depends on what time of the year it is, what the fish are hitting on, what colors they like, and the brands I'm comfortable with really at this point.
So what kind of fishing line do you use with the smallmouth?
I actually use a little bit. If I'm using a spinning reel, I lean more toward using braided line.
Mm-hmm.
I just like it better. But if I'm using a bait caster, I'll just stick to, you know, some normal 8 pound test, something like that.
Okay.
So it really just depends on what rod and reel setup I have and what I'm actually using as far as what I'm catching, the size of the fish I'm hoping to catch, I guess, and the bigger the fight I want that day, because sometimes I'll take out a spinning reel with 6 pound test and try to catch some big smallmouth. It makes for a much better fight. So it really just depends.
So you like to fight.
I do. I like to fight, yeah. There's nothing really better, and I think that's why I love bass fishing so much, because they're notorious. Like I always say around here, I heard it a long time ago, that bass are the
Kayla, you're coming in really muffled in and out. Can you check and make sure that you've got a strong phone signal?
Make sure it's not my phone.
Or, yeah, your phone.
Okay, I should have a strong signal. I promise I'm not moving around. So I don't think that y'all's technology likes me today, or maybe it's mine.
No, we look good here. Nah, so
we're just inept.
So can you name all the different types of species that you've hunted in your lifetime?
I can try. How long do we have on the show?
As long as you want.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, absolutely I can. As far as the main animals that I hunt every year, I love hunting deer, turkey. I love dove shoots. I think that's so much fun because, you know, you get to shoot with your buddies, and I love that. I love duck hunting. It's pretty cold, but, you know, I'm kind of trying to get used to that, especially getting to go to Canada. Sometimes I get a little bit better with the cold weather. Squirrels, foxes, raccoons. I used to love coon hunting, you know, with my dad when I was a kid. He always had some really, really good dogs, so we enjoyed that at nighttime. And boars, rabbits. I love hunting rabbits. Every now and then I'll get the chance to hunt some quails. We have some in this area, a couple of farms. And then I also like, of course, predator hunt to do some land management on the off seasons of deer hunting. So I'll hunt coyotes and bobcats and things like that to make sure that my deer, my turkey population stay up for my hunting season.
So Kayla, I'm from South Dakota, and so I grew up pheasant hunting. my dad and I used to do that when we were a kid. He's got about, I think it's about 80 acres up by Mitchell, South Dakota, and we always have good luck up there. You ever had a chance to go pheasant hunting?
I have a couple of times. It's not, you know, I here, but every time I definitely get in on that for sure.
Yeah, it's fun. We'll have to have you up sometime.
Hey, that would be awesome.
Pheasant's a good thing. I went pheasant hunting with my dad a lot, just because we had so many different cornfields and just fence rows and everything around my house where I grew up in PA, because I grew up in the sticks, basically.
Sure. Yeah, it's funny. When I was in high school, you can road hunt in South Dakota and basically have a round in the chamber in the car. So it's just a different experience road hunting,
Yeah.
You're driving around. And
it's like car camping.
Yeah, you know, you try to scare up the bird, and it's just kind of a funny experience. It gives me some fun memories. So, Kayla, of all those different species that you hunted, do you have a favorite?
I do have a favorite, I think. I think turkey is probably my favorite. If I had to pick one, I don't think I could ever pick one, but if I did, it would be turkey. And I think that's because you can respond, you know, the bird responds to you, you talk to the bird. It's really a different kind of hunt, and you're interacting with that animal at that point on a different level versus with deer. You know, with deer, you have, you know, a couple of different things you can do. You can, you know, rattle in the rut season and things like that. But with turkey, it's just a completely different level. I mean, even in the morning times before the birds come off the roost and fall off the roost, I'll get into the woods and kind of sit it out where I know a bird is going to be roosted. And I'll actually take my hat off in the mornings and stand up and hit my hat to where it sounds like a hen is coming out of the tree to fly down before I start calling. So there's just so many things that you can do on a turkey hunt and get those birds to respond to you. And really, to be honest with you, when you hear a bird gobbling, you know, 40, 60 yards away and you're getting ready to put him down, there's really not a better sound you can hear.
Excellent. How about in terms of your favorite fish to go after?
My favorite fish to go after, if I'm using a rod and reel, is going to have to be a bass for sure. I always target smallmouth, and I try to go to areas that are better for smallmouth in particular, but I love, you know, catching any kind of bass. I'll even catch smaller white bass. We have some white bass around here. A lot of people call them striped bass, but they would actually be what would be considered a freshwater striped bass, so not the bigger saltwater, you know, stripe that people usually think of. But I'll catch those little guys all day. They taste awesome, actually. When it comes to largemouth and smallmouth, I catch and release all of those, but if I ever get some crappie on the line or something while I'm after some bass, that's okay with me too. And that gives me a chance to actually have something to take home and have for dinner. But I think that would be my favorite. And then as far as bow fishing, it's always the best feeling when you end up getting a catfish. And there's only certain states that allow a catfish to be taken with a bow. But it's always the best feeling when you get one, because those things are so elusive to the lights. So it's like an accomplishment, like, yes, I finally outsmarted the cat. So that would have to probably be my favorite.
So I have a question from you, because I worked with a chef from Bayonne, New Jersey, who used to call catfish river rat. Have you ever heard that term?
I've ever heard the term of river rat?
Yeah, for a catfish.
I have not, actually. No.
He used to use that term all the time, and he was a very large guy, too. And he would say it was absolutely hysterical when he would say it.
You know, to be honest with you, I see a lot of actual river rats swimming in the river whenever I'm fishing. So I would probably, like, that's what I always think
right.
of, is an actual, like, big rat that you see, and you see it swimming by, and you're like,
like
my
a muskrat.
My fish is probably going to eat that today instead of my bait.
Well, I believe we have a caller on the line, a friend of yours by the name of Chris Cheaters. Chris, can you hear us out there?
Yeah, I got you guys. Can you hear me good?
Absolutely. Yep. Fantastic. Coming through clear. So, Kayla, why don't you introduce Chris to us?
Chris is actually my partner that I was talking about earlier that we're doing some filming with. He's in Saskatchewan, Canada, and he's actually the person that had the opportunity to go up and hunt with. And he had saw me take all my animals there, and so I just wanted I think he could probably tell you a little bit about our hunts and touch on that a little bit.
Sure, go ahead. Feel free.
Take it away.
Are you there, Chris?
Yeah, I got you guys.
Well, why don't you go ahead and kind of detail for us the program that you guys have up there?
Well, I've been outfitting up here myself for 15 years. My dad and family have been into it for way longer than that. So just to touch on, actually, since you got Kayla on here, we've probably seen thousands of guys from all over the world come up hunting, and I've never taken out someone that was – that actually scared me because their passion is so intense. And it was an outfitter's point of view. I was like stressed out. I'm like, holy man, like this girl is serious. She really wants to kill something here. So Caleb's passion is definitely one of a kind. So
yeah, he's the guy that I actually tackled when I killed the deer. So for such a little gal, I had a lot of strength that day.
So Kayla, is that the deer, the last picture I saw that you posted of a deer, was that in Saskatchewan?
That was in Saskatchewan, yeah. It okay, was actually so November the 27th when I killed that buck.
Okay, so that's up on Facebook right now, if I remember right.
It is,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, beautiful deer.
Oh yeah, I was just proud, and the pictures don't really do him justice.
No.
Because the feeling you have whenever you're actually sitting there and you got those horns in your hand is like no other. So I'm looking forward to, seeing what the taxidermy can, make him look like and getting him back here to be proud of him. So we're really looking forward to that.
I think the biggest thing that Kayla noticed on this hunt too is the size of the body on the deer that we have compared to the ones in Tennessee. And it's just genetics and like she said, with the weather and stuff, of course, our deer have to maintain a big body size to get through our winters up here. But she was really amazed by the size of its body too, for, being a 5 or 6 year old deer, weighing over 200 and some pounds was pretty shocking.
Wow.
To Kayla coming
this
from Tennessee.
Deer was huge.
Oh yeah. He was a horse. I thought that he had been bulking it up, in the gym or something whenever I got him. Chris said he didn't know of any locals, so I don't know. He had to have been sneaking off somewhere or something.
Well, that's cool, Kayla. What a great experience that must have been to go up there and see these great animals. That had to be kind of a shock to the system for you.
Oh, absolutely. And, it was so much fun from the time I even got there, even being able just to go and kind of see what it was like in their area, in their city. Well, I did fly into a main city, so I kind of got to see what that was like. I got to eat some awesome food they had there. I really couldn't get over that. I kept joking around. I was like, this food here is like no other. Like, I can't stop eating. Every time I'm not in the woods, I'm just hungry now when I'm here. So I enjoyed that. And then, the land was just beautiful in itself, being able to have the opportunity to be out in those woods and, see the different kind of terrain, because you're looking at, we have thicker woods here. They're looking at more like a brushland style when we were hunting in the brushland. Mm-hmm. So that was a wonderful experience in itself. And then, for the hunt to even produce more than what I'd hoped for was amazing. I went there with a goal to be able to kill a beautiful whitetail, and I ended up, completing that goal. But then as well, I got to kill two predator species. So that was wonderful. And so I couldn't have really asked for a better hunt while I was there. I'm getting ready to go back up there this summer, and I'm going to do some bear hunting.
So hopefully,
I'll have half the success, with that as I did in my first trip. So we'll be going to a different area. I'm going to get the chance to do some walleye fishing as well while I'm there. So that's going to be awesome. So we'll see if that trip can turn out as good as my last trip. Maybe my luck will keep going.
Yeah, we'll hope for you. That's for sure.
Yeah, I just showed these guys actually the picture of the whitetail you bagged up.
It's impressive.
You harvested up there in Saskatchewan. It's a nice looking deer.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts in regards to, because this is a buddy of mine was asking me about this last night, about having or using bicycles in the wilderness while you're hunting?
Really, I think it's more, it depends on the here, I could probably use a bicycle, 25% of the time. I've seen that they have the motorized or the electrical bicycles now. I've kind of seen those. You know, tired. So if I could have an electrical bike, that would be better than pedaling around everywhere, especially with the rolling hills that we have here. And it would be work to get up the hills if I was pedaling around. But again, I think it depends on the terrain. I do a lot of heavy wood hunting, and so I wouldn't be able to get a bike through there, I don't think, without hurting myself, because I'm clumsy anyways. So I'd probably crash. But for other people, I think it would be good, you know, if you're hunting a lot of flat land and stuff, especially during turkey season. You know, around here we can't hear a turkey near as far as someone hunting flat land can if they're gobbling, because of, you know, the land being not as hilly. But whenever you're thinking that, like in those terms, if you got a bicycle and you can pedal it out, or, you know, ride it out to get to that bird closer, that would be great if you were in some flatland area.
All right, let's see here. Just want to actually, you know, I've got a really big question for you. Do you reload your own ammo?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Do you reload your own ammo?
I try to at times.
Okay.
It's a difficult process. I actually do not have the equipment myself to be able to get that done. But if I have a buddy that does. So anytime I get the chance, I'm always saving all my cases and stuff.
Yep.
I save everything, which I try to do that anyways, regardless, because you want to, you know, if you're shooting somewhere on some property, whether it be yours or somebody that, you know, somebody else that belongs to, you want to be able to pick up, you know, your mess and your shells and stuff. But when I get the chance, I do. But it's difficult for me to get the chance to, just, you know, not having the easy access to the equipment.
Oh, definitely. No, I actually learned to reload ammo at the age of 12 at my parents' house. So a long time ago.
You know, it's one of those.
Hey, Kaylee, you're super muffled again. I don't know. Is the phone closer to your mouth, maybe? Or
maybe.
Oh, that's better. That's better.
Is this where? Am I still good?
Yeah,
now
you're
perfect.
You're
like
good.
Okay.
And
I'm gonna try to be real steel for y'all.
I don't know if Chris is still on the line with us or not. I wanted to ask him one more quick question. What was it like to have Kayla up there in Saskatchewan, and you were kind of able to show off to her with these big trophy bucks up there?
Yeah, it was. Well, it's kind of cool because she comes from, it's like a total different scenery and different way of hunting. Like she said, where she's from is rolling hills and, you know, pretty much solid forest, where she was here is kind of open land and just, you know, trees kind of sporadic throughout everywhere. So it was kind of different, but I guess to see the animals, she got the full meal deal while here, because we were running into big mule deer bucks. We've seen coyotes, we've seen moose. She's seen a lot of moose while she was here. You know, we were seeing 30 to 50 whitetails a day, multiple bucks. So
Wow. Someone
with that passion in whitetail and stuff, she was just bouncing off the walls here.
That's pretty cool.
She kept, you know, now she wants to shoot moose and mule deer and everything else. So I think her experience up here was really good. And it's like I said, it's really different from someone coming from the southern state and up to here, especially in November when we had ice on everything and a skim of snow and it's so cold.
Cool.
And you would never even believe the little things that I was amazed about. You know, here we get kind of cold weather, but we get, to y'all, it would be probably warm weather in Canada. I got there and I was like, man, it's cold here. And he was like, this is really warm weather. But I was just amazed at some of the little things. Like we were actually going to an area to hunt, and I got to cross over a frozen pond. That's actually the only time I've ever even saw a frozen pond.
Oh, wow.
So that was awesome. And so it really was. It was like a different world there.
So I just showed the guys the picture of your turkey you have on Facebook. Do you prefer turkeys in the fall or spring to hunt?
I love spring so much more. The laws are a little bit different around here.
Mm-hmm.
During the spring hunt, currently we can harvest 4 bearded turkeys a year during the spring season, which is awesome. You can take those with a shotgun, a bow, anytime throughout the season that's open. But with the fall, it's a lot different hunting. It's a lot different style, because you're actually your season falls on top of bow season for deer, so you're only allowed to have a deer or a bow in the woods. And it's actually not allowed to call during the fall season, and calling is one of the things I love the most. It's kind of more like waiting for the turkey to come up on you versus actually, you know, getting the turkey to come into you or getting the turkey to respond to you. So I love the spring just because of the different rules and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, during the spring, they're getting ready to breed and lay some eggs for us. So that's the reason that I guess they don't let you call during the fall. And you can only take one turkey during the fall hunt, you know, with a bow, and then you're done. So it's difficult to try to be in the woods during the fall and, you know, kill that first bird because, you know, that's your last one for the fall season.
Gotcha. And how many can you harvest in the spring?
You can harvest four bearded during the spring. And so it's, and they describe it like that because every now and then you'll have a hen that grows a beard. And, you know, obviously you're in the woods and things like that. You might kill a bearded hen. So that's the way they describe it. So not technically four gobblers, but four turkeys.
Gotcha. What are your thoughts on should there be stiffer penalties for poaching and or trespassing?
I do believe there should be in certain areas. I don't know the laws as much as I do for other states as I do my own. Obviously, I've had some concerns with, you know, trespassers and things like that on some land that I've been able to, you know, have the opportunity to hunt. And that's a very frustrating situation for a hunter that's passionate about what they're doing, just simply for the fact that hunters are putting so much into that land, not just money for food plots and things like that, but time and energy. You know, you've got somebody there that's really trying to hunt their bird ethically, and then to have someone come in and you know, have them take that away from you is tough. To be honest with you, when it comes to the laws, I kind of like to handle it on my own terms, and I have my own laws about it. Most of the time, I scare them off, and I don't have to worry about it again. You know, I'm pretty small, but whenever you have a little chick with a shotgun, it kind of makes you reconsider trespassing, I think. So, luckily, I don't have too much problems with that.
Yeah, I think that would work.
Yeah. Funny story, though. I actually had someone on my Snapchat when Snapchat rolled out the location. It'll show your location. I guess I'm not too good on social media because I didn't know that for a couple of weeks until I found out that someone had found my spot from my Snapchat locator.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, people will really do anything that they can if they're determined that they want to hunt that land illegally. So just got to watch people, I think, and be mindful of the land and cameras, and if anything happens, the good thing is you know, you can always rely on the law enforcement to take it over at that point, especially if you have trail cameras up to get pictures of that stuff. That's really important, you know, and just hope for the best and hope that you've gotten your fence up and secure and you don't have any sneakers around.
So that being said, Kayla, how have things changed kind of over the last few years with climate change? Have you noticed too much, too little water, lack of mild temps, reduction of softshell bugs for consumption, increased hail, tornadoes, extreme heat and cold? And have you noticed that effect on the hunting grounds over the last, whatever, 15 years that you've been doing this, 20 years?
You know, I have. I've noticed it a little bit. And with me being so interested in keeping my land managed and keeping good, you know, harvest around on my land, I try to watch everything. When it comes to fishing, these last couple of weeks have been really difficult for me because we've had a storm system come through, and that just really put a damper on my life. I got in some new Potomac custom tackle, and I haven't been able to use it yet. So I'm kind of waiting on the storms to clear out and the water to get back clear so I can, you know, try that out. But that's short term, and long term, really, I've seen it. I don't know if it's going to be on the turkey end, if it's going to be the climate change, because I've noticed these last couple of years I've had less and less birds that are gobbling in the morning after they get off the roost. They'll wake up and they'll gobble a couple of times, which is normal, and then they'll fly down and they'll kind of go, they'll go quiet. They'll be quiet birds. And I've been trying to figure out, you know, what exactly has been going on, because I've just seen this trend the last couple of years, and To be honest with you, I don't know if it stems from the temperature and the last couple of years it not being too cooperative with us during the spring season and changing up a little bit. Or I don't know if it stems more from predator control, because I know that I've noticed in the last couple of years our coyote population has went up, and I think a lot of that stuff gets ignored. So I've been trying to put my thumb on whether it's climate change or if it's coyotes. So that's to be determined. I'll keep y'all updated on that.
So while we're talking about some more of the controversial topics around hunting, I have to do my due diligence and ask you your opinion on gun control.
My opinion on gun control. That's a good question. I think that all in all, you're always going to have issues with people that shouldn't have guns getting their hands on guns. I think that in places where, you know, obviously there's young kids, I think that there should be some kind of system to make sure those kids aren't bringing those guns in. I think as adults, whether you are a parent or you're not a parent, I think it's important that you keep your guns safe and don't allow, you know, people that shouldn't be around guns have access to them. Not only youth that don't know how to handle them or might not have a training, but also adults that, you know, might not have handled them or had training. I think just being conscious of, you know, your firearms and where they're located and how accessible they are to people that, you know, shouldn't have them. I think that's so important. And, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, I feel like it's important that, you know, gun shops are doing their due diligence with background checks and things like that. So there's just so many different things, I think, together that we could do to resolve the situation without saying that, you know, people shouldn't, you know, really have certain types of guns. You know, to be honest with you, I've owned a gun my whole life, and I feel like that I could probably do as much harm with a knife as I could a gun at this point. You know, it all just depends. There's always going to be bad people around. So we just want to make sure people don't have access to hurt others. And how to do that is a complex question. I think everybody has to come together and figure that out and see where we need to start. Because obviously it has to start somewhere and build up from there. And I think that starts with, you know, controlling the firearms that you have, you know, selling them to people that are responsible. If you have the, you know, if you sell guns and things like that. So there's several different things, but sure. I would really like to know what y'all think too about gun control, because you know that has been something that I've heard so much about lately, and it's a complex thing when you're a gun owner. You don't want people to get hurt, obviously. You want, you know, the guns to be in the hands of the right people, but you also want to make sure you have your freedom to have yours. So how do you distinct, you know, people from that should have them and people that shouldn't?
No, and I think that's right, exactly in line with kind of where I'm at, Kayla. I mean, I'll just sum it up in kind of two things for me. I think, and they're really just piggybacking off what you said. One is education. You know, if we're going to have guns, that we need to make sure that we're properly educating our youth and adults that have never used them before. I think that is a gigantic part of gun safety and gun handling, is making sure that you're educated properly on usage and, you know, all sorts of things that go with that. And then secondly, for me, I know a lot of people see guns as a right. I see it more as a privilege. And I think with privilege comes responsibility. So again, it's just kind of making sure that you really, you know, are taking all the precautions you can and being as responsible as you can. So,
oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's so many things that you can do to get educated on gun safety. Not only, you know, you can go and take a class, but just working with your handguns, if you own handguns, or working with your rifles or shotguns, and making sure you know how to properly operate and clean those firearms so you don't have any mishaps. So there's just so many things. And I think practice makes perfect. As long as I've been around firearms, there's always something else you can learn about them.
Mishaps
and
like
that's so important.
Sorry, I was gonna say mishaps like Jose Canseco shooting his finger off, cleaning his gun, because, you know, why check the chamber when you're gonna clean your gun? You know, my thoughts on gun control have always kind of spawned from two things. Number one is, why don't we just treat it more like vehicles? And, you know, you have to have a license to, you know, basically get a license by passing a written exam that you understand, you know, the important safety and workings of guns, then a live test that you know how to handle a gun. Then you have to be registered. You have to have insurance in case something, you know, bad happens. And renewal tests, you know, to make sure that you still have the proper vision, that you're still not having any mental issues. And also, while this one is not exactly like a car, but people who have, like, domestic violence or things like that in their past where they're prone to fits of anger are people that I think you kind of gonna have to watch a little bit in some way or shape or form. The other thing I'd like to see is to eliminate the loophole of being able to avoid a background check by doing a personal gun purchase online in the states that allow it. There's about 32 that do. And it seems like that just invites the kind of thing that happens on Amazon and eBay with all kinds of products, which is someone goes out who has a clean record, buys a whole bunch, and then tries to resell them at a higher price to people who are trying to get it through, you know, more anonymous means. And I just feel like if those two things were kind of enacted, everyone could still get the guns. Everyone could still have all the guns they wanted. They would just have to prove that they're responsible, and then there would be no issues, you know, with anything. I mean, bad things, of course, are still going to happen, but I don't think they would be prevalent the way they are now.
Mm-hmm. No, nicely put.
Absolutely.
Nicely put. my big thing, being an NRA for life member, would be the education process of learning how to maintain your guns, cleaning your guns, the safety of guns, how to respect your gun is one of the biggest things. And, you know, I always say, you know, everyone would say guns kill people. People kill people. If I want to walk outside, I could take a baseball bat right now and go beat someone upside their head and kill them if I really wanted to.
Sure.
And I could do that with a gun, too, if I wanted to. But, you know, that's the thing. If, as long as we educate people on what to do and what not to do and don't let the psychopaths that are shooting these people get their hands on them through illegal means, which is normally what they do. So that's your illegal gun trade right there, even though I know I think the school shooter in Florida actually got that gun legally. I'm not 100% sure.
He got the gun legally. He got a number of them legally. He was reported to the or the FBI had
that
opened.
I believe that it was legally.
Yeah, I think he had an
The FBI was unaware of him. He had been reported.
He was
like two or three 911 calls about him. Yeah. So it's just obvious that there's a structural failure.
It's all
the
failure.
Signs were missed.
Well, just like in Texas with the guy that got released from the Air Force, he was supposed to be put on a list and never was put on a list by the Air Force.
Right, and never be able to own a firearm
after
that.
So I mean, there's communication breakdown within our whole governmental system on everything possible, not even gun control. There's communication breakdown on everything political.
And as we always know, when it's a political issue, people are going to take sides just to take sides.
Yes.
And they're oftentimes going to be belligerent. They're not going to listen to their side. And it's too bad because we used to be a country where we could talk and be like, okay, we think this, and we think this. So let's come together. And where's the middle ground all three of us can kind of say, okay, that's a decent concession for all of us to make. And then we get kind of what we want. And, you know, but with it being a right, it's hard.
I like to piggyback this story because I never really heard this story until recently. When the Japanese invaded Pearl Harbor, the commander over there wanted to push into the United States all the way to Denver. And his commanding officer said, you don't want to do that because every single person in every house holds a firearm. It's not like you're fighting an army. You're basically fighting every single person in the country. And I never
and guerrilla warfare.
Yeah, I'd never heard that until I watched a special, you know, on the Japanese front, you know, a couple years ago.
And Kayla, I've got a kind of a funny question for you. What would happen if you were to go hunt with an AR-15 rifle?
You know what? Probably the same outcome as it happens with my shotgun and my deer rifle. To be honest with you, I'm going to come out with a harvest, I hope, if I have a good day and a successful season. And the only thing is, I mean, the only difference is going to be the style of the gun. I don't think an AR would be for me as, you know, kind of easy to carry around. I like shooting ARs. I like them for fun, but it's just not something I'm going to prefer to take into the woods. I have seen several people that, you know, kind of modify it so it turns kind of into a deer rifle. People use it for, you know, hog hunting. But to me, it's just another gun. And again, it's knowing how to operate that gun and knowing what the causes are and to pulling that trigger, knowing what's going to happen when you pull that trigger, that you got to be mindful all the time. And again, like anything political, you're never going to be able to satisfy everybody. Nobody's the same. If everybody was, the world would be so boring.
Yes, it would.
So nobody can ever be satisfied. But I think that coming from, like you said, there's so many people that are just fighting and fighting. I think that a big contributor to that is different states having different laws. I definitely support the right for states to be able to have their same laws, but I think was something that we need to get a control on. Obviously it would be easier to manage if everyone had the same laws. Like you said, we have different states that are legally selling guns online to people that are strangers. So can we trust that they're doing their due diligence to make sure that gun's getting in the right hands? So I think we just need to come together and make sure that everybody's on the same page with that so we can move forward and what we need to do to make sure that these guns aren't getting to people who I feel like, should have never had one in the first place. And like you said, doing better background checks and making sure somebody's responsible. The only thing I would suggest would be, a letter from the doctor. A lot of these cases, whenever you have people bearing arms that shouldn't have them, there's, some stressful situations in their life or some psychiatrical issues going on. So it's just all around a sticky situation for sure.
It is. And just like many laws, the higher the level of the law, as in like taking it to a federal level, the more you're doing a one-size-fits-all situation. And in very, very, very few circumstances is a one-size-fits-all situation going to be the best resolution to an issue. And
absolutely.
So, I guess they could do a little something, citing interstate commerce to maybe close some of those loopholes. But, yeah, I am more in favor of states maybe coming together and agreeing on something would be better than just a federal law imposing something, because then you're going to get so much pushback that I think you might kill the goodwill that you're creating, kind of thing,
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I was wondering if we could maybe switch on to some more non-hunting and gaming sport-related topics. Would you be down for that?
Sure, let's give it a whirl.
Excellent. So you are a volunteer and you are a fan of Tennessee. So I'm guessing that you have some of the same admiration that we do here in Denver for Peyton Manning? Oh, hello?
Can you hear me?
There you are.
No, yeah, we couldn't hear you there.
Oh, sorry. Yes, absolutely. Peyton Manning will always be the best.
Yeah, we even though he was throwing wounded ducks, there were wounded ducks that eventually got us a touchdown. So we couldn't have been happier to have him come here and close out, our third Super Bowl. Yeah. So I was going to basically, the reason I was bringing up Tennessee was the whole fiasco with Greg Schiano. And I know that you had told me that you're a big college football fan. How do you think that bungled process negatively is affecting recruiting, possibly for multiple years?
To be honest with you, I think that that's going to follow us for a little bit. I think that all in all, I'm hoping that players that are looking at us for, a possible home are thinking to themselves that we've finally gotten a grip on it. We did. We had an embarrassing switch on our coaching staff, and obviously that was not the best we needed for our recruits. So I have saw that it helped, or it made it worse. But I'm hoping that players can realize when they're looking at us for, a prospective home that, we're trying to build to get, to where we need to be. We finally have some coaching staff and an athletic director that's there in place that is, really made some quick, I think, good decisions. So we're going to see how that pans out. So I'm hoping that they kind of look at it as maybe the worst is over. But I think that it's going to probably follow us for a little bit because we just blew it so out of proportion.
Well, what was your take on Greg Schiano just from the output? Because, he's worked for Urban Meyer with no problems. He was never technically I'm a Penn State fan, so the whole Sandusky issue is a whole different story for me because a lot of people don't know exactly what happened. He was never officially named that he knew anything in the whole Sandusky.
He was just
happenings.
Accused by Mike McQueary.
Yes, he was. It was a he said, she said, basically, or he said, he said. What did you think about that? Did the students overreact to it? Because, the guy has a resume like there's no other when it comes to college football.
I think that he done wonderful things at Ohio State in his position. I think that he's a great coach. But I think that after... Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, sorry. I lost you for a minute. I think that, you know, after we kind of made such a big deal out of it, I think at that point that it was never going to work. Right. I don't, you know, I've sit and, you know, thought about it. I don't feel comfortable saying whether I think that he knew or he didn't know. To me, that's too serious of an issue for someone that don't have any facts and wasn't there, wasn't directly involved to put their opinion on that. You know, you got to realize that you're looking at a whole nother issue that, you know, that affected people. A lot of people. So it's a touchy subject. And I think the way our fan base handled it, I think that we could have done a lot better with that. But I think that after it blew up like it did, I mean, we were in the headlines for days. Every time I opened up, anytime that my sport naps on my phone, it was something embarrassing on there, you know. So I think that after that started, it was never going to work out. But, you know, I think he would have been a good coach as far as a coach, but I don't think it's, you know, it's really my place to be able to say that either he was or he wasn't involved in, and that's something that I think that, you know, if he was involved in, we've done, you know, research. Obviously, Curry put out a statement saying he did do a background check, and he spoke with several people at Ohio State, and I do feel like he did his due diligence on that, but I also think that certain things ruin people's reputation, whether or not they were, you know, directly involved, just because people are going to assume they did.
Right.
So it's a double-edged thing, is that he would have been a great coach. I think he's done great things. But at the same time, I think he would have been really bad for our fans, because we had already made that decision as a whole that he wasn't the person we wanted in that position, and we didn't want that on us. So I think at that point, I'm glad that, you know, we took the steps we did and we made those decisions, because it was a bad deal.
It did seem like perhaps the fan base blew it a little bit out of proportion, and some of the boosters. And for those of us, or for those listening out there who don't like really know what we're referring to, Tennessee's football program needed a new coach, and they had an athletic director by the name of John Curry, and he was kind of at odds with a person named Philip Fulmer, who was a former winning coach for Tennessee and who had wanted to move into that athletic director position.
Correct me if I'm wrong, a national championship winning coach.
Correct.
Yes, and a lot of winning seasons, actually. Yeah. And then got chased out after like a 5-12 season.
Yeah.
But you know how that stuff goes.
Yeah.
You know, what have you done for me lately kind of
yeah.
thing. So then what happened was John Curry went out to hire Mike Leach of Oregon, I think it
no,
was.
No, Mike
Washington State.
Yep.
And remember those fiasco.
Yeah, and he came from Texas Tech.
And so
that.
Then he got they froze the boosters, whatever, froze that because the fans freaked out.
Yep.
They were going to do Mike Leach, and then for some reason that's when Curry got ousted. And then, or then he tried to bring in Shiero. I don't know. It was really messy.
You really can't
make
this
situation.
Stuff up. I mean, so Fulmer, he was kind of the last Tennessee coach to do really well.
Yeah.
Right.
But he was fired by Curry, but now he's replacing Curry.
Right.
So it's like, what is going on down there?
And they brought in Jeremy Pruitt, who was the defensive coordinator for Alabama. And if you've ever seen Alabama's defense the last, you know, 9 years of dominance they've had, you can't see that as a bad hire.
Right.
No, not at
Good
all.
Good recovery.
Kayla, what do you think of that hire? Does the Vols fan like it?
I like it. I approve. It's the Kalenator approved.
The Kalenator approval there. I love it.
Yes.
Even being a coach on Alabama for Nick Saban, though, because some people look at that and say, "Well, I mean, as much as great Saban is, because he's great, but you're like, well, you guys are rivals, and sometimes that's a little fine line to cross."
Yeah, I think whenever you sign up to be a Vols fan, you know, you sign in that red dotted line saying that you're not supposed to like Alabama.
Right.
Unfortunately for me, I'm pretty close to the line, and I do love fishing in Alabama. One of my best friends is a Roll Tider, and I always give her a hard time about it. But we watch the games together and stuff like that. So when it comes down to it, we just kind of have more fun picking at each other than anything. And I think with a lot of that rivalry, that's what it comes down to. I even have a friend that I fish with in Alabama, and I'm like, yeah, we're in Alabama, but we're still on the Tennessee River. I was like, have you noticed all the fish stay in the middle because they want to be in the Tennessee water? You know?
Hey.
So we just have a good time with it.
And I bet you they're whistling Rocky Top in the middle of that river.
Yeah, we always have a good time with it. We just joke around. So I'm happy with the hire, and I think that he'll do good things. I'm hoping he'll do good things. We'll see how that goes, and I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, obviously, you know, anybody that knows college football knows that Alabama's defense is. So I'm hoping we get a lot of that from him, and he kind of does new things with us, because I think for the past few years, our fans have really, driven a lot of processes, touching back on the coaching, hiring and everything. I think the reason that it all started like that was because our fans were pushing to hire a new coach, a year before and 2 years before. Even some of them were wanting a new coach. They wanted Butch Jones out, and I think the people that are fans just got tired of, waiting around. And then whenever we, started the hiring process after our embarrassing season, I think that everybody was just kind of fed up with it. And I think that's why it led to everybody acting like the way they did, because it was just one thing after another. It got to a point where I didn't even really know who was going to be our coach. I just stopped looking until I was like, I'll figure out who our coach is next season sometime.
Well, we have kind of a soft spot here in Denver for Tennessee alum. We already talked about Peyton Manning, but Peyton's backup quarterback was a guy by the name of Todd Helton, who is a pretty big-time baseball player here in Denver.
A Rocky lifer.
Yeah, he was a Rocky lifer.
At least we got him into a World Series, even though we couldn't get him a W.
always a nice thing.
Sticking with the Tennessee theme, how do you feel about Marcus Mariota, and do you feel like he maybe isn't progressing as much as would have been expected at this point, especially looking at like Jared Goff and Carson Wentz's meteoric rise?
I'm Team Mariota for the most part. I agree with you that, he is a seasoned player at this point. His fourth, season with us? And so I think people are expecting a lot of things out of him this year. But I'm thinking that, as long as we can keep him healthy, I think he has had some road bumps with that. I think that might have set him back a lot. I think as long as we can keep him healthy and to contribute to that, deepen our offensive line, I think that we'll be able to give the people what we've been looking for out of Mariota, because I have seen him, have some really good days, and I know what he's capable of, but also know that, there has been some road bumps. So I'm looking forward to him and what they can do this season, especially going in, kind of being able to build up their offensive line, hopefully deepen it and keep from injuries is the main thing.
I agree. I like Marcus Mariota. I think he was playing injured last year. And I think he's going to be a great sneaky draft pick in fantasy football this fall, Kayla.
You should pick him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I picked him last year, and I'm a little ticked off. But then I got Carson Wentz off of waivers, so it all worked out in the end. Until he went down, of course. I think that he looked excellent his second year. And then I agree with Nate. I don't think that he was fully healthy last year. No. I think that there's such a drive to win right now with coaches not wanting to get fired that they don't let players heal all the way. And we saw the negative effect of that in Indianapolis with Andrew Luck and how devastating things have been for him. Is he going to be even playing this year?
That's a really good question.
So, but, that trade they made a few years back where they traded down, they got a lot of draft picks, and they've turned those draft picks into a good defense and a solid offensive line. So they're definitely trending in the right direction. I think they could use one more top shelf receiver,
good fantasy guy. I love Davis. I think he's going to be good this year.
Who?
Davis. Is it Corey Davis, the rookie receiver there?
Oh, I don't know. Kayla, do you know?
I don't know. That's new to me.
I think Nate's just pulling things out.
Now we're going to have to check that out. All of us are sitting here thinking like, now we're going to have to look into that.
Absolutely. Going on some other NFL news, the Buccaneers cut Doug Martin.
Yes, they did.
Was that a surprise, or did he play himself out of a role?
I think he played himself out of a role.
Yeah, I wondered that too. But he still has that name value, that name cachet.
Yeah.
But he's really only had two good years, the rookie year and then the year like 3 years later.
Yeah.
Other than that, he's hurt or underproduced or,
He's always been hurt.
Yeah.
From what I can remember.
But we also know that running back careers are short. 4 years is the average. So,
they definitely are.
I guess maybe, he might just be one of those guys. Like, when you look at someone like Shady up in Buffalo, that's the exception to the rule.
Yeah,
that's not
yeah.
the rule, because usually people are going to be hurt or worn down, or their knees are going to be messed up after after even just 4 or 5 years.
So, Kayla, I'm going to switch switch questions here a little bit, because you're sitting with three avid golfers in the room. That you're talking to. I've saw some golf swings on your Facebook page. How do you like sport? How do you like the sport, and how much do you get to play?
I don't get to play that often. Golf is something I just picked up 3 summers ago, so I haven't been playing that long. I feel like I'm kind of at a disadvantage, because every time I play with my buddies, I'm the only left-handed golfer.
Okay.
So
nice.
I always feel like I'm at a disadvantage. I do feel like I've picked it up pretty quickly, though. I don't know how, because usually I'm not good with stuff like that, but I just try to pick up on a whim. But it's one of those things, like, from the time I picked up a golf club, I always want to, you know, practice and try to get better. It's just one of those things that I don't feel like I'm ever going to be good at it. Also, don't feel like I'm ever going to be able to stop trying to be good at it.
Well, you know, when you go out there and you golf, it's like that one sweet stroke is all you're really looking
all
for each round. You just need that one amazing shot to make you go, I want to come back and do that again. And Kayla, don't you worry about being a southpaw. As a fellow southpaw, all I can tell you is left is right and right is wrong. So, you know, never
oh,
forget
God.
That.
Absolutely. That's going to be my new motto this year.
Oh, boy.
So, cruising on to the NBA, this is an issue that they're going to have to address. And I tell you what, I'm not going to be shocked if we find out that somebody is not an owner of a team after this season based on this. And I know that might sound crazy, but this is not something the NBA is happy about dealing with. And this is Mark Cuban
uh-huh.
on an interview for Dr. J's podcast said that if your team is no longer in the playoff hunt, you might as well lose. And he admitted telling his players that. Obviously, the commissioner, Adam Silver, was not happy about that. Fined him $600,000. Now, for Mark Cuban, that's not a dwarfing amount of money, but that's not chump change. I mean, that's more than I've made in my life, I'm pretty sure. So
that's more than he invested in Shark Tank last night.
That's interesting that y'all bring that up, because I was just talking to one of my friends at work about this. I haven't fact checked this, so I don't know if this is completely true, but he had read somewhere that the amount they fined him would have equaled to him about $28.
A quick trip to
McDonald's, you know, with him and somebody else is what he, you know, basically ended up paying for. But I think that was just, you know, bad for him to say, regardless of whether he thought that or not. Some things, you know, no matter what, are always going to be, you know, better left unsaid. So if you think that, just don't say that, you know. Just don't say that. You don't need that for no reason.
Well, the Sixers done that for years, and they never really said it, you know.
Right.
It was just about, you know, believe in the process.
Well, and it doesn't always work. I mean, Cleveland had back-to-back-to-back over, like, 4 years or 5 years, you know, number one picks, and they couldn't
do nothing.
They finally had to trade it all the way to Minnesota to get one player, and Minnesota's actually kind of rolled that into becoming a better team.
Sure. Well, Mark Cuban is never – I mean, he's always had diarrhea of the mouth. So.
Oh, right. He's terrible when it comes to that.
He likes publicity. He likes attention.
He wants to be the center of attention. He's the guy at he's the guy at, you know, mid-court, half-court. You know, front row center.
Well, we all remember how insufferable he was before he won a title.
It's like Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
But once he won a title, then he kind of settled down and kind of got more relaxed and everything, because he no longer felt like he had to prove himself, you know. But I'm sure at this point he's thinking, we need a replacement for Dirk Nowitzki. So why not Tank?
Of course he does. There's no question about that.
Yeah, with the recruiting process, you know, like you said, sometimes I think that works and sometimes it doesn't. If they want to try that to be successful, I like to see how it pans out. You know, everybody likes to watch good entertainment, especially when it comes to sports. But I think at the end, whenever you're looking at number one recruits, how are they going to mesh with your team? You know, because there's been situations where you have extremely great ball players on a team together and they just can't come together and make anything. So I think it comes down to that. You know, how well is your number one recruit going to mix with your current team?
Absolutely. Chemistry is everything.
Kind of seeing that with Oklahoma City.
Well, guys, I don't think we would be doing our due diligence if we didn't talk about the college basketball situation and the state of college basketball right now with the FBI investigation. And
4,000 wiretap recorded conversations in 300 days.
Yeah, and there it
and
looks
was that
like
one guy was $200,000 alone on that one transaction.
$100,000. And it's something that's going to be right, over the past 15 years. I think college basketball's regular season has really taken a downfall just because we all focus on the tournament in March Madness. But this has major schools listed in it. I mean, we're not talking.
We're talking
no names. We're talking Duke,
North Carolina,
USC's,
of the world, yes.
And all these schools in Kansas, and 4,000 wiretaps. You got the Arizona coach on a wiretap saying we'll give you $100,000. So
this is following just after the Patino scandal.
Yeah,
it's just Louisville.
It's all just falling downhill from there, and it's one of those things that's going to change the face of college basketball. I hate to say it.
No, of course it is, and I think. It's one of those things. How long has this been going on, guys?
Oh,
I mean, you look at you can go back to the 70s and look at John Wooden. You know, John Wooden's pyramid of success. What a crock. He was probably paying. He was probably paying Kareem and, you know, all the other guys to be on the team. And it makes me wonder how long this has been going on.
Have you seen the movie He Got Game?
Or Blue Chips.
But that was, He Got Game starring Ray Allen, you know, and that was the player, and then Denzel was his dad. And what did he do when he went to college? I mean, he was on a recruiting trip, and they offered him every manner of I don't know if you call it illicit entertainment or illegal entertainment or whatever you want to call it, but
entertainment.
You know, entertainment to try and woo a guest, you know. And, you know, is it just time in both college basketball and college football to start considering what they really are, which is the minor leagues for the two
really
professional
is.
Sports? Major League Baseball doesn't have that. They actually have their own minor league system.
Right.
Football and basketball don't, and they use college for that.
Well, I mean, it's a business, guys. Everybody else is making money. Why aren't the workers making money?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, that's the question I think we got to look at. I mean, if this is going to be an – if this is going to be an amateur situation, then, you know, let's keep it that way and tighten regulations and, you know, make sure that there's more of a watchdog. But, you know, if you're going to continue down this path, the one and done, you know, the NBA makes it tough with that policy because they can't just come in and play. Or, you know, so now kids, if they don't go to college, they're going to Greece or China or wherever else to play. But, I think that it's time that we take a hard look at this and say, wow, these kids are bringing, especially the stars, they're bringing tens of millions of dollars to these universities. You know, what's the problem with, you know, paying them? And maybe it's a scholarship and maybe some things that are related to sports. I don't know how you disperse it
well,
and decide what the amount is.
There is an argument that they need that from those big sports, the money they make, to fund the rest of their sports. Now,
sure.
Whether or not that's true, I have no idea. I know Major League Baseball used to contend that they were losing money,
well,
but they would never show.
You know how it is in America. We live within our means. So
right.
If we have $100 million, we spend $99, right?
Exactly.
If we have $10, we spend $9.99. So that's just how it is. You know, you adjust accordingly.
I feel like that. I definitely feel like that. I think it could be beneficial for the players too if they, you know. They're getting paid to go to the university. Not only are they going to be profiting from that, they're going to be better in themselves. They're getting out with, you know, professional basketball players, some of them that have been in the game for several years. And what, you know, what hurt could it do to get more experience with some elite players that are going to be playing at these universities before you make that step?
Agreed.
You know, so I think that's important.
Absolutely. You have Drexel versus Delaware here, so I don't know what happened.
You don't know what happened, Alexi. Let me ask Kayla a quick question here before we wrap all the rest of this up. High school sports and college sports. Did you play any?
Well, not technically. I did play softball for several years. You know, I did summer softball and stuff like that.
Okay.
I wasn't ever the best at it, to be honest with you, because I was always focused on when I was going hunting after the game.
Right.
But I don't know if you would call cheerleading a sport. I participated in that for several years as well, just kind of to keep active and things like that. So I was always involved in football and basketball and helping with the team in that way. It was just a little bit differently than cheering them on from the stands. You were just cheering them on from the sideline. So
definitely,
that was really all. I kind of leaned more towards the non-traditional sports, you know, outdoors and things like that, versus the traditional sports. I'm real clumsy, so that never really worked in my favor.
Wait a second. The Kalinator's clumsy? I don't know how that works.
Well, I always blame it on being real tall. I think that's what it's fault. You know, if you think about somebody being real clumsy, if you know somebody that's real clumsy, more than likely they're pretty tall.
How tall are you?
They're taller. I'm right at 5'10".
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I'm pretty tall for a lady, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, taller than
you
all of us.
Yeah,
you got
kid.
Us beat.
You know what? We never actually answered our
trivia
question. No, we
didn't, and then we'll wrap up the rest of the college report there. So, Kayla, do you want to give a shot at the trivia question? Did you hear what it was?
I did what it was, but I don't really want to answer. I'd rather give a tip. I'd rather give a hint to the listeners,
well,
if that's okay.
I know what it is because there's tons of these hanging up in my dad's garage. So,
yes, that's my hint, is that I love hanging these on my wall.
So, again, the question was, what is the fastest growing bone in the animal kingdom? And the answer is? JP?
Oh. White-tailed deer antlers.
Yeah.
There we go. So,
that's why they're always rubbing them off on the trees and so on and so forth. They grow right back. So,
but obviously, we wanted to keep the hunting theme,
yes,
consistent through our trivia question. So back to Drexel.
Yeah. So this happened the other night. So this is a little the NCAA report brought to you by JP here. Drexel versus Delaware Thursday night set a record. Drexel Dragons, which is a school in Philadelphia, if anyone didn't know that, they were down 53-19 with 2.5 minutes to go in the first half. They overcame the largest deficit in Division I basketball history of 34 points. They wind up winning 85-83 over the Delaware Blue Hens. Absolutely incredible. I saw that. I saw the stat line, and I was like, good Lord, that's ridiculous. But you know what? That's Philadelphia basketball sometimes. You get on those huge runs where they just – you're unstoppable. And that used to be Philadelphia basketball all the time.
That is kind of amazing, though.
It really
although
is.
Although that doesn't – that kind of makes you remember the either the it was the not the national championship, but the semifinal between Duke and Maryland.
In Kentucky? Oh,
it was that one was 31 points.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's still pretty big deficit to blow.
31, and then I think Michigan State had the biggest one at 30 in Division I football.
Oh, 30 points in football?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Like,
so I remember
like the Patriots coming back on the Falcons.
Yeah, back in the day when Buffalo went through all their Super Bowls.
Against the Oilers.
Yeah. Was that a 35-point comeback?
It was like a 35-point comeback for them when they beat the Oilers.
Congratulations to Drexel.
Yeah.
I remember just flipping on the TV, and at one point it was 53-19.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And they won the game.
Two and a half minutes to go in the first half.
Good for those kids.
They're like, yeah, this one's going to be a close one.
Yeah, right.
Good old Drexel down there.
Wonder how many people were left in the stadium or in the arena after the
no
end of this
fooling.
One. Yeah.
Yeah. And then running, trying to get
definitely
back in.
That's for sure.
And let me round out the college report here with college hockey. Since Kayla, we have University of Denver, DU here, won the national championship in college hockey last year. They played the number one St. Cloud State last night. They went to a 3-3 tie, but DU got the extra point, plus one, because they did score in overtime. Number two, Cornell beat Rensselaer, RPI, 4-2. Minnesota State over Bemidji State, 2-1 win. Notre Dame beat Michigan State 6-3. We got another great game coming up tonight with St. Cloud State and Denver. Denver is behind 4 points with 3 games to go. They have St. Cloud State tonight, then the Miami of Ohio next week at Magnus Arena, which I will be at both nights covering. So,
where is Rensselaer?
Oh, God, man. You'd think I'm going either Minnesota, Michigan, or upstate New York.
Okay.
I forget. I know where they are because I did a database with all of the schools and division for lacrosse, and I honestly just don't remember off the top of my head, and I don't want to look it up. I'm being lazy.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Well, I think that this is one of the few times I think we've kind of hit the wall of the material we had to discuss. Kayla, is there anything else that you'd like to dig into in the last few minutes of the show here?
I'm think I'm good. I've covered a couple of things. If y'all have some questions for me, any that's left, I'd be more than happy to answer those. But I'd like to just take some time out. You know, obviously had a wonderful time talking with y'all today, and a lot of fun. So again, I appreciate it.
Oh, we couldn't have been happier to have you on the show. It's a nice thing for a show like ours where our listeners get used to hearing us. It's always nice for them to get to hear someone else and hear a different perspective, and actually for us to be able to branch out into a sector of the sporting world that we don't cover
very often. Yeah, we definitely don't cover very often. So, Kayla, you're more than welcome to call in anytime you want. When you listen to the sports show, you know where to find all of our previews and so on and so forth of what we're talking about, and you know how to get all of us.
And we'll try to make sure that we get this show spliced.
Because y'all know I'm heavy-winded.
Well, that was fun, Kayla. It was really nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we will get this show spliced together for everyone out there who was listening to us live on Blog Talk, and then it kind of went silent there for a bit. We'll get this uploaded and so everyone can listen to the full show here and hopefully enjoy the interesting not outtakes. What the word am I trying to think?
Back
the interesting take, I guess, that Kayla has for us on her world there. So we do want to again ask anybody who's listening to the show if they're willing to help support us. If you could go to Facebook, you can like us there. You can follow us on Twitter. Both of those were at at the SPT Offensive. We're also available to listen to live on TuneIn Radio. iHeartRadio, as well as Blog Talk Radio. We're also available on demand at all of those stations, as well as on iTunes. Again, thanks everybody who tuned in this week. Any sign-offs that we have for the listeners out there?
I just want to apologize for the technical difficulties. We'll get the show up and running, and I want to thank Kayla once again for coming on and being so gracious with her time.
Nate?
Thanks. I appreciate y'all's time as well.
Absolutely. And, I just want to reiterate what JP said. Thanks to all our listeners. I know viewership is up, so we're going to keep doing our best to come up with some interesting material and have awesome guests like Kayla on the show. And great show, guys.
Absolutely. For those of you out there who are a big fan of our fantasy segments and like some of our knowledge to help you with your picks, we'll pick a week here in the next three to do a full fantasy show to get caught up on the positions. I know we're way behind. We've only covered catcher and first base, and we haven't even covered the top 20 at all. So we'll be doing that sometime in the near future, but we'll be sure to post all that information. So, again, everyone, thanks for tuning in today. Kayla, thanks so much for being on the show. Thank you, JP. Thank you, Nate. And that'll do it for us. Everyone have a fantastic weekend.
Offensive out.